I can feel the consequences of the manipulation exercised by this company. That's what happens to you for working for the Beast.
The Beast? I sputtered, shocked by her words.
Yes, you've been working for the Beast. I don't understand. You're working for people who have no scruples. They don't care whose throats they have to cut in order to accomplish their mission. You should understand that business is business. I don't see any way I'm going to get through to you on this subject, so why don't we just drop it? Tell me, what are your plans for the next 2 years?
Well, I'm returning to the United States to attend to my personal business. I know that as soon as I set foot in Los Angeles, I'm going to be arrested for not keeping my July 15th court appearance. As far as work is concerned, I imagine there'll be a motion picture being filmed some soft-where. I'll find work. If nothing's happening in Holly Soft-Wood, I can always go with some European production, as I have in the past. In the meantime, I'll start researching all the material for the book, to get me to the point of making credible the things you told me here, along with my own experiences. If I find it making sense, I'll start writing that book. But at this moment, the whole idea still seems far-fetched. I'll need further verification before I embark on such an ambitious chore.
Chaco, you promised Yacht would do it, and I will, if my research checks out. I'm 100% sure you're not faking, but my research must corroborate this conviction. I know your financial status is tenuous, but that's not a valid reason for not taking these 2 years off and financing them yourself. There will be odd jobs along the way that will help you along while you're taking the time to do this for us.
Look, I'd like to do it. But I'm sick and tired of putting money and effort into something that won't support my way of life. You have to realize that this is because of the many disappointments I've experienced over the past few years. I don't count on anything unless I can see it in my hands in the form of a contract or a signed check. Your negative attitude is understandable. You need clarity of thought to accomplish what you set your mind to do. Let me give you an example. You want to have a motion picture released here in Peru. You build up your hopes, and you're gung-ho on the idea for a while. Then something happens and boom, the whole thing fails. You're left with nothing. What you're telling me is that in order for you not to suffer, you must have a successful project. I sincerely hope your project is a success. But there's one hidden thing that tells you that it's not going to work out well in the end. So in order not to be crushed by disappointment, you say, I knew it wasn't going to work anyway. Now let me tell you, Chaco, this is definitely the wrong attitude to take. Remember when we talked about prayer?
What about it?
We used an analogy about a penthouse in Rome. You said that when we pray we must make clear mental images of the things we would like to do or be doing. Let's give that a more practical use. Don't tell me your wish. Instead, make some mental images of the sort of thing you'd like to have as far as writing this book. Something that would make you happy and wouldn't harm others in any way. I started thinking I'd like to go back to the United States, finish my Peruvian business, and have plenty of time to research all the things I'd learned with Rama. Rama said, in order to accomplish what you've just thought, you have to have some shape and form to your thoughts. Talk is cheap. It's something like picturing yourself in a realistic situation with people you're going to be dealing with a setup, whether it's an office, a library, a movie studio, in what city, the kind of clothes you'll be wearing, if it's cold or warm out. In other words, there has to be movement, shape and color to your mental images. They must be alive in your mind. When you do this, you'll be projecting Ananas and Ananites into space, into the fourth dimension. At some given point, a benign frequency will pick up your vibrations and spray them with that magic spray we call the thought materializer. You make it sound so easy, but it seems to me you don't really know how bad it is out there in that world of mine. There's very little room for spiritualism in the major cities of this planet. I never said it was easy to make your dreams come true. It takes a great deal of effort. According to all the ancient religions, material things aren't important because you can't take those things with you to the next plane in life. Only the wisdom and understanding you gain in life, that leads to eternal life, matters. Let's picture you driving on the Pennsylvania Turnpike at 95 miles per hour. You go off the road and are killed. What would happen to all the possessions that you have? I guess if there were no one to claim them, they'd go to the Internal Revenue Service. If you really want to cultivate your spirit, you must abandon all the material things that have no spiritual meaning or value for you. When we spoke about your writing this little book of ours, you weren't ready to think seriously about cultivating your spirit. But I think you've now evolved to the point of being able to understand, especially now that you're gaining more knowledge and practicing your spiritual activities. What do you mean by practicing my spiritual activities? Astral projection is, in itself, a preparation for death. What went on today, the leaving of your body, was an exact replica of the experience of death. You had no physical body to feel the actual process of death. You had no conception of time or space. Your spirit left the body at an even frequency. If you'd died, you would have passed to the spiritual plane without suffering. 6 months ago, had you been hit by a truck in New York and been killed, your spirit would be wandering all over the place, scattered. If by some chance you could have collected 100% of your ananas and ananites, they would have rushed to a body that was being eaten by worms. Your physical structure would be alive again, but a monstrous thing. So you die again and go through that all over again. It might have taken your soul from 400 to 1000 years to finally accept that it no longer had a physical body. That's hell, if we want to accept the idea of punishment for the spirit. Christ says, take care of your clothes, wash them and be prepared. This symbolizes the preparation of the soul to pass to another plane of existence. Is that what it means in Revelation 16:15 when it says, behold I come as a thief? Blessed is he that watcheth and keepeth his garments lest he walk naked, and they see his shame? That is telling you that the only thing humanity should really be concerned with is the cultivation of their spirits, because that's the only way they're going to find true eternal life. Rama, I'd like to continue my spiritual practices, even if it means giving up my apartment in Beverly Hills and all the nice things in life. But I have a feeling that as soon as I get back to my old ways I'll forget about these experiences and it'll be just one of those things we talk about at parties or the local pub. Something to have a big laugh about. I just don't think there's any room for spiritualism in this world nowadays. That's what usually happens. But I think you'll see there is more to life than just survival and acquiring material things. When I mentioned sacrifice, I didn't mean you should abandon everything and become a guru or hermit. You can still live in this world of yours and continue practicing the teaching of Christ. I think I'm going to start making some mental images of what I would like to be doing in the next few months. What's that? I'm going to start praying that I will return to Peru so we can have more sessions like the ones we've been having. Tell me what you would do as an initial step for your dreams to come true. I'll picture talking to my people in New York about coming back to Peru, in spite of the political situation this country is facing at the moment. I'll talk to the people who are responsible for not having my picture released here, and make another effort to have it shown in Peru. I'll make my images clear, with shapes, color, and movement. I'll act in good faith and keep all my activities on a professional level, so I don't hurt anyone. Sounds good, Chaco. If it works, you have my assurance, Rama, that I'll do everything within my power to have this book of yours published, no matter what. Would you give up your sports car and apartment? If everything works out as you said it would, yes, I will. Even if people call you crazy, make fun of you, and ridicule you in public for having written such things? I think the things you and I have spoken about are well worth sharing with my fellow human beings, at least those like myself who are willing to do a little work to find out the truth for themselves. If you proceed with a clear mind and a healthy attitude, I give my outer space word that your dreams and wishes will come true. Remember this, when you get to the point of actually believing that what occurred a few months before was at one time nothing but a dream, then you can openly say it is the answer to a prayer. But you have to be sincere with yourself before you and be sincere with anyone else. Rama, it shall be done. I don't have any commitments at the moment. I'll take the challenge of putting aside 2 years of my life to do this little project. Let me warn you again that it's not going to be easy. You'll encounter many problems, tribulations and tests. There'll be times when you'll be tempted to forget the whole thing. When that happens, I very humbly ask you to think of me, because I'll be with you in spirit, giving you all the support you need to accomplish this task. There'll be times when you'll feel depressed and be tempted by evil forces to take a meaningless job instead of wasting your precious time on something as flimsy and meaningless as writing some stupid book about UFOs. Are these things really in my future, or are they just examples of what might happen? I'm using my fourth dimensional powers to see what is lying down the road for you. I sense your sincerity. I know you want to accept this challenge, but at the same time, I also know you are a strong, inquisitive character who can do the job. If you want to send out a couple of vibrations as a prayer to be answered, you know the rules. By the time we'd finished this conversation, we were already at the medicinal waters. Since we were both tired, we decided to go to bed as soon as we got out of the pool. The next morning, Thursday, September 26, 1974, I woke up very early. Rama had already left. I couldn't go back to sleep, so I got up and went to the bathhouse. Rama was just going into the water. It was still dark outside, we could hardly see one another in the room. Rama suggested it would be a great experience to take a little trip this early in the morning, before my spirit absorbed the kind of magnetic charges that would prevent me from seeing or hearing other spirits out in the cosmos, outside the atmosphere of our planet. In preparation for this early hour astral travel, she began explaining its connection between the spiritual activity known as dreaming. Astral projection is one of the easiest faculties a person can develop, she said. Each night, every person gets a manifestation of this during the common dream, when the person's soul leaves the body and just wanders around in space. This is such an everyday experience that people think nothing of doing it. But when it happens in a controlled manner, we call it astral travel. This morning we were going to repeat the same trip we took the day before, but my body was going to be free of any magnets or magnetic stones that would orient the waves of my spirit's energy. Before I took off my clothes, Rama suggested that I go to the car and bring in my cassette recorder so we could record any sounds that came out of my mouth. When I returned with the recorder, I set it on the bench and jumped into the water. The carbonation and warmth accentuated my sleepiness as I tried to consume soft hydrate. Don't go to sleep on me, now, Rama said. You have to be fully awake and conscious so you can tell me what you see and hear. I can't, I have this heavy impulse to close my eyes. Maybe you need an object to train your eyes on to keep them open. Rama placed the microphone of the recorder, which was metallic and round at the base, directly in front of me. I started concentrating on the shiny object until it seemed as if it were a great sphere about 4 times my height in diameter. Meanwhile, Rama was making sure I didn't close my eyes. At first, I heard voices without fully understanding what they were saying. Then a very clear voice began speaking to me. I understood the voice, but I couldn't get any meaning out of the words. Rama told me the voice I was hearing was one spirit in the universe that was going to be my guide for the day. I didn't see anybody in spiritual form near me, but I could clearly hear the voice. I must have said something to answer the spiritual guide. I don't know, but I feel I'm very far away from my body. Yes, the voice said, you're many thousands of miles away from the Earth. Are you afraid? Afraid of what? I've done this sort of thing many times. Rama asked me if I knew or if I could see who was guiding me. No, I don't see anybody. You will see him very soon. I can hear his voice. He's asking me if I remember ever knowing anything about Saint Jude, the patron saint of the impossibles. Why don't you answer him? My spiritual guide says the spirits in the cosmos are constantly at work. He says it's necessary to ease me into the situation, because I'm about to enter the atmosphere of another planet. Soon I'll arrive at my destination, then I'll start saying some very important things. I didn't feel any movement as I had the day before when I was out in space. It simply felt as though I were inside a dark place where there was no entrance or exit. I couldn't hear or see anything. Finally, I could hear my guide saying that we were in our way to the planet Mars, where we would find some cosmic archives. For a few moments there was dead silence, in which I could only hear the recording going and what sounded like a train passing by. There were no voices, and I was about to say something when I felt some force take possession of my body and spirit. Even though I was out in space, I was also aware of what was happening to my physical body. The silence lasted about 5 minutes, maybe more. I began shaking my head. Rama said later that she began to get worried at this point, but she didn't say anything because I started talking then. I'm getting out of the darkness, I can still see this great white disc, but now it's so huge inside that there's something that really excites me. I can see a world coming towards me at great speed. Is that the Earth? No, answered my guide, it's the planet Mars. Why did I feel this terrible impact? This is to be expected when you enter the attractional forces of any celestial body in space. I've had this sensation a couple of times before, but not quite as abruptly as it was just now. It seemed as if my whole physical body was doing the astral travel soft hyphening. Wow, this is so real that I know when I come back into my body I'll have 100% recollection of this whole trip. I can even use my hands and mouth. While I was saying this, I was still touching the sphere, the microphone, feeling the chrome metal part of it. I saw a light blue planet coming at great speed, and in a few moments I felt I wouldn't be able to fit inside this white disc. Don't worry, my spiritual guide said. We're already inside the atmosphere of this world. Ah, this is a pleasant sensation. I feel happy. It seems to me that we're about to touch the surface. Yes, we're already on firm ground. It was like a garden. I could see a few people at a distance. My guide was pleasant looking, I was getting good vibrations from him, and there seemed to be a pale light glowing all around him. He came close to me and put his hand on my shoulder, but it was difficult to understand what he was saying. He seemed to be having a good time, but his laughter was caused by something mutually funny because we both laughed. Strangely enough, though, I didn't know why I was amused. Rama spoke to me then, saying it would be wise for me to practice this form of astral projection because after a while the images wouldn't be as blurry as they were this time. Rama, I can hear what you're telling me, but I can get all the benefits of sensing what's going on around me as if I had my body with me. I felt the man's hand on my shoulder. I feel the temperature and the breeze on my face. It seems colder than our temperature on Earth. I am walking in front of a fountain with some kind of water spring in a garden-like place. What else is around you? Rama asked. I'm glad you asked, because I've just become aware that there are other spirits nearby. I don't know what they're doing, but they seem a bit curious about my presence. This place is great, peaceful and inspiring. It's inviting me to think. Wow. I don't think these spirits like being called curious too much. My guide says these are spirits that come from all parts of the universe and that they always accompany him. He says those spirits are also in train soft hyphening. Can you still see the great disc? Yes. It has changed. It's gigantic. I'm getting the perception of these mental images and spirits inside the sphere now. Rama told me that if I wanted to ask my guide anything, this would be an opportunity to learn about the cosmic laws associated with astral travel. Nothing came to my mind, it was clouded with confusion and surprise. The trip was so new and exciting that I couldn't think straight. Finally, I asked my guide, "How are the angels?" Generally, the angels are spirits in the universe, but there's no such thing as beings with wings attached to their backs. What happens in your world is that the word and meaning of angel has degenerated. I take it you are a language expert on Earth? Yes, sir, I am. Do you know the etymology of such a word? I think it comes from the Greek word egoelos, meaning messenger. That's what the angels of your holy scriptures were. Regardless of how much they have evolved in their cosmic progress, I want you to know that in your world they have been present even since the beginning, cultivating your planet with spiritual teachings. And what about my friend Rama? She claims she is from another world other than the Earth. She's a space traveler, but she's also a very old spirit that has been making many types of announcements to your world. Her real name is Ramatis.
Ramatis?
Is Ramatis a spirit or an incarnation? The spirit of Ramatis lives in the body of the little girl who is now next to you on the earth.
Then her spirit and physical body are now on earth?
Yes, he said. When Ramatis goes to other worlds and her physical body is on a certain planet, what you see are her ananas and ananites reflected at a distance, not a real physical body. You see lots of spirits here, but they are nothing but energy, there are no atoms in us.
What about you, sir? Do you have a physical body waiting for you somewhere right now?
No, I do not. I can incarnate only for a limited amount of time, and send messages anywhere in the universe. When I am seen by someone, it's usually in the form of a spirit or a ghost, if you prefer to call it that. In the early days of your world, these angels were given a mythos-logical personality. Some were giants, and some took a human form and visited the earth to teach the cosmic facts about God and creation. You must also be aware that two kinds of angels exist, some good and some bad. Those in your world are better known as devils or demons. When these spirits leave a physical body, they go into the cosmos. But if they haven't acted according to the teachings of the eternal God of creation, they're restored in their structure and sent back to the world to relearn. Your spirit has lived many times before, but you can't remember all your previous incarnations because that's a defense mechanism the spirit has. It chose to forget in order not to spoil any future plans. But if it is necessary, it can remember when it reaches maturity. You must understand that it would be very tedious, and no help of any kind, if a spirit would be constantly remembering that in one incarnation it killed its mother or perhaps its brother or in some other life it was killed by someone. The suffering a spirit undergoes is a way to purge itself of its wrongdoings. Some religions in your world call this process karma. Certain spirits incarnate constantly with the mission of learning to control their criminal instincts and to create a universal fraternity, to study and make pro-soft-gress. The ones who accomplish their mission get an A and continue onto another plane. The ones who don't, get an F and they have to start all over again. As soon as my guide in the cosmos had finished telling me this, I heard Rama's voice again. Chako, are those the words that were said to you?
No. But I'm doing my best to say it the way those thoughts came to me from my guide.
There's certainly a new kind of language in my head at this moment. What do you think of the contents of what was being put into your head?
The only thing I can say is that if we take a few moments to analyze the situation, we would see that things are so bad in my world that it's certainly possible that a great part of the human race is going to get a massive F, and when they die they'll have to start all over again, spiritually, that is. Don't worry about the people who won't believe you, because as you can see there's only a minority group of souls who are going to be getting an A and move on to other planes in the cosmos. Before I had a chance to ask any more questions, my spiritual guide finished the visit by saying that the purpose of it was mainly to show me how some spirits are, prior to being reincarnated on Earth or any other planet. His final words were to the effect that there is not a single spirit incarnated on the world who cannot benefit from these teachings. He said whoever wants to expand his or her knowledge must think of their human bodies as nothing more than a temple where a spirit can be cultivated. The first step in that cultivation, he said, is astral projection. Returning to my body wasn't as confusing as it was getting out of it. I could see the light blue disc that was Mars getting smaller and smaller. I don't even remember taking off, or at what point my guide left me. I could see him, but I couldn't see the other spirits who were following him. Then I saw the Earth and felt excited. I couldn't wait to see Rama. It was getting bigger, then all of a sudden, I could feel the density of its atmosphere. It was heavy and thick. I could smell the contamination of the atmos soft hyphen f, it almost stunk. A few seconds later, I was aware of Rama holding me. There was plenty of light in the room now. Rama was grinning with satisfaction. The first thing I did was to rewind the tape recorder. It was already past the middle of the second side of the cassette. We both got out of the water. It was a little past 10 in the morning. I was starving,
because the longer one stays in the water, the hungrier one gets. As we started to walk up the hill to go to the dining room, Rama told me she was very pleased with my performance and that there was no reason why I couldn't write about these experiences and share the promise of eternal life. Later that day, after Rama and I finished the session, she told me that at the beginning I was rubbing the microphone with my fingers. Rama put a pencil in my right hand and I wrote on a piece of paper, "I will remember what I see and hear." She said that during the trip my face had not looked normal, that my facial expression had been distorted and my eyes lost their shine. When I spoke, my movements had been those of a robot, as if all the actions in my physical body were being maneuvered only by the speck of energy coming to my body through my silver cord. After breakfast, we both took a ride on the patrol bike, and spent most of the day making a recompilation of all the things I'd learned ever since the day we met each other. By the time we were back in Akaya, it was dusk. We hid the motorcycle in the back of the hotel and walked to the river where we sat near the open swimming pool and waited for complete darkness. Rama said that the sky was going to be our movie screen. She was going to put on a show for me so I could understand visually what she was telling me all day about the balance of the universe. While we waited for complete darkness, she told me that at one time we thought the world was flat, then we thought we were the center of the universe, until Galileo Galilei in 1551 discovered that we were only one speck in a vast universe and that it was the Earth that rotated around the sun. When it was completely dark, Rama said, "Did you know that our solar system and many others like it go around and around, and that the center of the rotation is the star Alcyone in the Pleiades?" "No, I didn't know that. But now that you mention it, I do seem to remember something about it. Let's see it." The pitch black of night was like a gigantic blackboard. I stared at the sky until I got to the point of actually seeing the Pleiades and how the Alcyone star was the center of gravity for many solar systems, including our own. It was like seeing a movie on a screen. I wanted to reason why and how it was happening, but Rama motioned to skip the trivia and to concentrate on what I was seeing. As she pointed at the stars in heaven, I could see nothing around me except the white lines and circles that brought out the shape of a constellation. The same feeling you get at the planetarium in London or Washsoft-Ington or Disneyland. I could see the stars and dotted circles that Rama was drawing as she spoke. The Illustrasoft-Shins were very clear and actually moved. In about 2 hours I had a complete view of our solar system in relation to the universe, how a system is born, destroyed, and how it goes through evolutionary changes. I saw how certain forces that can in fact upset the balance of the universe. I was aware of sound out in space, sounds that would not be recorded until 1976 by some 27 stations built somewhere in the world. I saw a planet that existed somewhere between Jupiter and Mars disintegrated into cosmic dust. Rama told me that if I wanted to, I could call this experience astral projection. No doubt about it, it was a fantastic trip, fraught with solid, valid astronomical information that has passed the most skeptical checking by this author in these past few years. Since this was our last evening together, we went to a little Goodby party. A few people were having a family reunion and we had been invited. Seeing Rama's intersoft-action with those people gave me a warm and comfort-soft-table feeling. She was simple and sweet. We ate, sang, and danced until it was time to retire for the night. The next morning, Friday, I got up early to get my things together. I was returning to Lima that day. About an hour later, Rama met me for a swim and we had breakfast together. I asked Rama all kinds of questions about the book I was to write. As always, her answers were sincere and full of common sense. "Rama," I said, "let's imagine that you people are ready to take your 144,000 people. Give me some idea how you would accomplish such a thing. First of all, those 144,000 people would already understand the rules. They would know what is resoft-quad to get a one-way ticket on that boat. Would they all go in one trip? No, out of necessity, it would be a gradual thing. A few thousand at a time. But your planet is in such turmoil right now that no one knows what might happen next. If we had to, we could arrange to have everyone together in no time. But how? We have many ways. Bear in mind that we're not alone.